And that way Arts Project goes around to different
Hold
places.
Firmly, interview yourself at the microphone.
So, they put stuff all over.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did grab a flyer and sit and look at it. I spent about 5 hours at the Maryhill Museum up in the Gorge, not knowing that they had a bunch of cartoonists in there from Seattle and Portland, some of which I know. They mainly went there to see Rodin art because it had been there for about a century in this mansion that was supposed to be like the center of the town. You know a little bit about that, right? Most people in Portland hadn't been there. This is only the second time I've been there, and I've lived around here for 50 years. And my buddy had just gotten out of the hospital, and it was one of the things on the list that we never did. So we went up there and just had a blast. And then also on the way back, instead of going to Stonehenge, because it was raining, we figured, wow, what the hell. I'd already seen Stonehenge. It's not the real one anyway. I know it's a peace memorial and everything, but we went down a little bit further down the road to a place that's not very nicely named, Horse Thief Lake, and that's where there's thousands of Indian petroglyphs there, and they're being protected. It's on the Washington side of the Columbia River, it's Stevenson, Washington.
And there's a Stonehenge, too?
There's a Stonehenge that's just about a mile from the Maryhill Museum that was built after World War I by the same guy that built the mansion, because he was appalled at how many people were slaughtered in World War I. It doesn't say that if you visit it. It looks more like just a general military tribute, but he really hated the fact that so many people were slaughtered from his hometown, let alone Americans in general. So that's why he spent the money to put Stonehenge out there. And, you know, self-proclaimed pagans and whatever. A lot of people go out there for eclipses and stuff, and it's a lot of fun to go there. And you can look down on and see where... What's that?
Where is this?
Oh, it's in Stevenson, Washington, so it's right in the Columbia Gorge. I'm trying to think where it's parallel to on the Oregon side. Pretty much Hood River, a little bit farther down from Hood River, and White Salmon, where we have a signal, right? So I couldn't pick it up when I was there. All I heard was Grateful Dead on 90.7 yesterday, kind of crackly, and couldn't pick up I think it's 100 point whatever in White Salmon. We were there going through toll bridges and stuff, because there's like a 75-cent toll across the river there. Either there or at the Bridge of the Gods, appropriately named. But I'd never been down to where the Indian petroglyphs were. I didn't realize that there are thousands of them down there. Many of them have been removed to museums. Some have been brought back. It's guarded by the Oregon Department of Transportation because so many people are vandals down there. And there's certain places... Huh?
But it's Oregon, but it's on the Washington side.
That's on the Washington side. I keep thinking Oregon because it's all the same country, whether there's a river between it or not. It's all...
It's Washington Department of Transportation.
Yeah, I said ODOT. I meant Washington. W dot. But yeah, there are people down
there's
there.
A lot of private land in the Washington side, I thought.
Yeah, you could tell that there's, it's mostly cows, and I even saw an emu out there. You know, so they have exotic birds or whatever. But the road was blocked to where She Who Watches lives. And there's a whole bunch of them up and down the Columbia River. Most of them are guarded, or they're secret because they don't want people spray painting them. And it's a really deep religious symbol. It's two sets of eyes and this kind of mask. I was telling my buddy that it takes practice to learn local language because it's full of consonants, but I figured, well, I've been here forever, I might as well learn that one word. So her name, her non-English name, her original name is Tisagalal.
Tisagalal?
Yeah, there's lots of T's and S's in there. So when white guys and other folks came, they just called her She Who Watches because the eyes are about this big looking out over cliffs, and there's at least four or five of them up and down the gorge. And the road to where she is was blocked. And not armed, there weren't really armed guards there, but there were people in trucks looking around, and there's these signs that say, this area is under surveillance. And the whole parking lot, even though you're out in the middle of nowhere, seemingly, the train's going by and the river, and it's still really rural. You're on camera when you're there, at least in the parking lot, and there's always people coming in and out, looking. And as soon as we left the gate, going back up to the main drag, I could see where spray paint, quote, artists had tag right on the old basalt, just kind of saying, we're here and we will get in if you don't watch. And I can see some people up in supposedly restricted areas too that were probably on private property, or they were just up there. There's no way they can restrict the whole thing. It's like restricting the beach. How are you going to do it? But since the place has such a deep religious and cultural significance, they've spent taxpayer money to guard it. But they weren't guarding it up until like the 1960s. In the 50s, they still don't know why. It said in the signs there, they came in there with heavy construction equipment and sliced big rocks, like enormous ones that would fit on this hearth, to get them out of there, to get them in museums or whatever. and quite a few of those had been returned back. So they were cut, and they were put there. And anyway, that's probably too much words about it. It's just good to just drive in there. And it's all in, and you could easily look it up on Google or whatever.
The museum's pretty cool because he's one of those, Sam Hill's one of these guys that just figured if it was his idea, people would come. But you don't build a town up on a hill with all that wind and the gorge. So he thought that his house would be like City Hall in the center. Anybody that really knows about the gorge knows they shouldn't start a town unless it's wind protected. So there are towns closer to the river down there. The thing that's heartbreaking is at least it's good to see it for real is when you're standing there at Stonehenge nearby, a replica there, it'll tell you where to look for the Indian village and fishing area of Salado Falls, which was covered by a dam. Which, you know, there's a lot of people, including me, that think the dam should be destroyed. Not just for salmon, but so the fishing areas are back. Every year they go, especially if it's like an anniversary, like it's been like 75 years. So it was like the 70 or 70. A lot of Indians go down there and they basically just conduct a funeral. It's a big mourning thing for them to not be able to get down there. So that kind of that's what we saw yesterday.
Wow.
And it's also the weird thing about it, since I'm an artist, well, I'm interested in things. For years in the Oregonian and these other newspapers I've been reading that Sam Hill, the guy that built that house, knew everybody in Queen Victoria, and Rodin, the great sculptor that did The Thinker and all those other ones we've all seen in cartoons. There was a model for The Thinker in there, a plaster model. There's a whole bunch of bronzes in there and sketches that go back more than 100 years, and it's really amazing just to see that. And, you know, it's an old mansion that's full of all this 19th century and turn of the century art. Just by coincidence, some cartoonists logged on it, so there's this whole room full of a bunch of current cartoonists in there, a bunch of original art from all over the U.S. And I just stumbled into it because I didn't look it up online. I didn't know it was going to be there other than this mansion.
You know what today is? I think we're tired. Today is the day.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Today is the day that the anniversary of his testimony. In front of the KMRC, and Tipperary and other such people. It was at the State Assembly in Maryland that he went nuts on his Motley Crue t-shirt penalty frenzy. The kids that had the terrible things happen to them if they wore the Motley Crue t-shirt, all the way up to the various other lyrics. Eventually, he released those albums that had no lyrics on them, saying these are the only instrumental albums in the history of music to have one lyric on them. You might get dangerous material from the songs with no lyrics.
Yeah, I like him a lot, and I just got it. I'm on the Zappa.com list, so whenever they send, I suggest going to Zappa.com, so you can get on the list.
I go to Kill Me Radio. Kill Me Radio.
Oh yeah, I haven't looked in there, but I just met the family because they actually came out with a CD of Zappa's complete testimony to commemorate that. Oh. So, and I just got an email about it last week. I don't know if it'll turn up at Music Millennium because Terry Currier, the guy that runs that place, really is a Zappa fan. Some of these things you have to buy directly from the family.
Right.
That one I am going to pop some money in the mail because you can get the transcript of the whole testimony. You can find it at the Lewis and Clark Library here in Portland, but I want to hear him talk. I want to hear the whole thing. So I've heard edits he did on Frank Zappa Meets the Mothers of Prevention for years. We've played it a bunch of times on cable. I'm glad that his family's still there paying attention. And I suggest if you haven't seen Dweezil yet.
I've seen ZPZ when they came to Portland a few months ago.
Good for you.
It was superb.
That was one of the best ones. I've been to all of them. Now that he's got his own band, he kind of went through the cycle where it was playing with his dad's friends, obviously. All those guys got different things to do. So that band, that's interesting because those are all young people. Many of them weren't even around when Zappa started.
All the time I put in, it was totally worthwhile.
It shows you that music is worth keeping alive. Yeah. And I'm glad that Dweezil's still in his 30s. Now I gotta look around a little bit more. What's your name, by the way?
Bill.
Bill.
I met you at the Mother's Day.
Oh yeah, we did meet. I'm sorry.
I
knew you were familiar. I just couldn't remember your name. And it's usually, you know, it's like 2-3 in the morning. My brain's mush when I'm there.
The program director described me as the fourth greatest actor. And apparently in the world there are so many Zappa fans, and I work among them in terms of zealous.
Well, hopefully you'll be at the next one. I know it's not till May.
I was going to be going before that, except we're not doing it. I'm afraid Becky's going on a road trip that week on the Monday day.
Well, you know you can come down any Friday, pretty much, you know. But I got this. I do a show called The Wiggle Room. It's on late night Thursdays. It always follows Dr. Zom in the middle of the night. So it's like, for the next several months, it'll be every last Thursday. So I'm doing, obviously in October, I'll be doing, since it's on the 20th, I'll do Halloween stuff. And,
since we're going to move.
Huh?
The Halloween concerts are the best songs in the best shows.
Well, I don't know if I'll play a long one, but I'll at least play Goblin Girl that day. And, what I was going to say is that, you know, just when I think that nobody's listening, this guy called me from Tennessee the other night. And he said he lived in Portland for 18 years, and he really missed KBOO, so he subscribes and listens to it back home. I mean, it was his new home in Tennessee. And, we just got to talking. He told me where he was. I said, well, any requests? And he goes, no, you're driving. I said, well, how about a general request? And he goes, Zappa. And I go, boy, did you ask the right guy on that one. I said, are you sure you don't have a specific request? Because they have pretty much every official release, and I have a bunch of bootlegs. No, you're driving. Okay, so I just played the set of, I don't know what the hell it was. But it was about an hour since he requested it. I don't always go in there with plans. And I figure he's going to go to the trouble of, you know, calling me long distance. Maybe he has pretty long distance. Maybe that doesn't matter. The fact that he called me from across the country made me go, yeah, I guess I won't quit the show for a while. Besides, he brought up one of the main reasons that I wanted into the station to be a DJ in the first place, other than with John Lennon, was Zappa. I knew about those Mother's Nights, and that's how I met Daniel back in 1992. But I've been listening for years and years and years before that.
Well, that's how I knew KBOO. That's how I knew what KBOO was. Because
me too. Man, mostly. I mean, I knew it from jazz because it was KBOO's. I mean, it was Portland's first jazz station and the first classical station.
I had a friend that used to read the news on KBOO. I was in a band with him, and he also plays Zappa covers sometimes. This guy Blake Kincaid, this is like back in the mid-90s or late 90s.
Oh, I thought maybe you were going to say it was Matt. He's a guy that, I'm trying to remember his last name.
Justin Miller is also great. He plays album covers also. He plays
Ike Willis did appear at the Mount Tabor, you know, not this one.
If you get Justin Miller started on Ruffin Day, he basically won't be able to get his top tools done. He has like that Cartman rule about Ruffin Day. He can't stop playing until he's done with the entirety of like arrogantly twisting his turn on campus street and fully charging and everything he does.
See, I try not to do that to people because they may not want to hear the whole spiel. I know what you're saying, but that guy should do a blog. He may just clear the room out. It's like, oh, Zappa. Oh, no, another guy.
Justin Hurt, one of the funny things, is one of the great funny ones. Get Justin to play Why Does It Hurt When I Pee at some of the short meeting.
You know, I still have people tell me that have been doing radio shows with us for a long time. They go, I don't really like Zappa. I don't like his sense of humor. I said, then you haven't really been paying attention because there's a lot of stuff where no word is said. And he plays, I get in arguments about this too, he plays this as well as any guitarist living or dead, past, present, or future. And his guitar doesn't have a sense of humor. Well, maybe.
I think it does. I mean, that's my expression.
Okay, you don't like the scatological humor, you don't like the sex humor, you don't like the roadie humor, then don't listen to it. There's 50 other albums that have nothing to do with that.
But there's a bunch of little, like, Rosetta Stone songs, you know, like, there's a bunch of them.
Like Inca Roads or something?
Like Jazz Discharge Party Hat, right? There's a big long, 5-minute long song about what the bandmates do with the party, the underwear.
Yeah,
you know the song? But
yeah,
the entire song is a conversation, but the guitar is a guitar that matches every
inflection
of the word the entire way through. So when he describes it as a conversation, like a heavy right hand conversation style, that's what they mean. Like, he's resembling conversation down to the tiniest little semicolon of it, and it's dead up.
I think it's interesting that there's still controversy about him because he's been dead since 92 or 93. When I got some stuff from Ryko, when I was doing stuff right after his death at KBOO, there was this quote that was on a postcard that was sent to me that said, I don't need to spend all my time explaining myself. You either get it or you don't. And I feel like that too. I don't, you play Zappa on KBOO? Well, I don't like his sense of humor. I should have smiled and changed the subject because I don't have to defend the guy. I don't have to defend anybody. Just like I don't have to defend Dickens. I don't have to defend myself, even though I'm not great like those guys, because it's a waste of time. Right. It's like, well, I don't like strawberry. Well, then have chocolate. There's other types of ice cream. Right. I don't want to hear about it. I know that sounds really nasty, but life's short. I don't want to debate something that I've already decided on myself. If they haven't made up their mind, that's okay, but it's not my job to convince them.
Active listening is a different kind of behavior. Right.
That's what jazz musicians and classical people do, but most pop fans are still... They want to hear Lady Gaga instead of Zappa. And they probably wouldn't even sit through a whole Bach or Charlie Parker piece either, because it takes too much work to actually think, oh, they changed a chord in there. My ears hurt. They're bleeding. No, they're not. You know, and that's the problem with being critical about everything that you see here. And you might miss out on something that could really make you feel good instead of arguing with people about it. And people, it's just part of the Greek tradition that we come from, that we debate, you know, just like they were doing. Or you debate in Congress. You don't have to debate everything in the rest of your life, though.
Wait, I got it. You know, I'll sit on my back here some time and say catatonic speed, do guitar notes, and they imitate an executive kind of guy, right? And then you hear that sound.
He was lucky. He was the kind of person that really wasn't accepted into our culture, but they panicked after the Beatles. And they didn't want to miss out on the next Beatles, so they signed a whole bunch of people, including the Mothers. You know that story. He told it over and over again. In normal circumstances in this country, we'd never know about him, or Beefheart, or anybody else that was associated with him, because of this artistic panic, similar to one that's going on right now. Like, you can get well-known all over the world if you're on YouTube. YouTube didn't exist in 1966, but if it did, the Mothers would have been on it like that.
The Mothers got really lucky in that they invested well in hippie organizations.
They invented DIY like a lot of other hippies and beatniks. They invented make your own scene. Educate yourself. That's one of the first things I heard from him, other than rock and roll advice. Okay, you don't like what's around you? Go to the library and educate yourself. That means self-reliance. It's American to be self-reliant and not worry about what other people like.
Way back, he had short hair and he was doing the scores, these really bad black and white movies.
I've seen him. I have one.
And he went on Steve Allen's show.
I got that.
Way back before he was even Carson. He's on Steve Allen's show playing a bicycle.
That was one of the first things that my buddies asked me, because they knew if I like Zappa. They go, have you seen him playing a bicycle on YouTube? I said, sorry, I've had that since 1990, and you know, it's been with collectors long before I got it. But it's nice it's on YouTube. Now I can actually show people and not bore them with this pile of tapes, because they come over to my house and go, oh, I don't want to watch all that shit, but if you just plug something in on YouTube.
When you compare the Brady's and Bear, like that was like 5-6 years before like the height of the Hank Ashby.
He hadn't even grown a mustache yet.
So when you imagine these Zappa years later playing a Fillmore, and he has long hair, and music is a record, and it's totally different. Like, you imagine, like, his peers at the time, like, how he, like, a brain that scores for movies and writes batteries and does all that stuff, like, towers over. He's like 18-year-old rock star kids that come out, right, they got a leather vest and a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, they got some dudes writing the Book of India Moore, right?
You want to look around and
ask the Chamber of Commerce how to get to Hank Street, not all smoking.
Right. This is the other reason I don't defend him, because long after you and I are dust, he isn't going to be needing defending. There are other people that aren't even born yet that are going to be checking him out, just like with Hendrix.
If you don't pay attention to it, it turns out like all these other countries have festivals, and like you don't have to try.
Zappanals.
They do it on their own.
In Germany, they do those big Zappanals. I'd like to go to that. But I look at it this way. He's one of the few people that really deserves, you know, for the past 100 years, one of the few Americans that deserves the moniker of genius to me. And most of those people that really deserve that, they're misunderstood long after they're dead. The next one that I could throw in, maybe people wouldn't think that they'd have anything to say to each other in the same room, but I think they would. Orson Welles is the other one that's still completely misunderstood. Sometimes you're just so goddamn good, you're too good for this planet. And if people only know a little bit, that's fine. And it's not like I've studied both of those guys all my life, but they're so misunderstood because they became icons.
Yeah, I highly recommend this old thing from the 80s. It was kind of this obscure collector's thing. It was produced by Steve Martin's company, but it's Phenomenon. It's about the Russian.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah.
And like when he's
I've got it.
When he began like trying to sell electricity as an instrument, one hand for volume, one hand for pitch. This thing was.
Have you played one?
What's that?
Have you played one?
I've never been able. I never tried to play one. Before.
Twice for me. Once at the Exploratorium. They have one of the old RCA ones that. Theremin in San Francisco, and I played one at KABU, and then he told me to back off.
Yeah.
And the reason I that happened is that when that film premiered at the Cinema 21, he was invited by Daniel to come down after that show. And I found the tape. I have to clear up the a little bit of background hiss in it, because it's a videotape taped off of cable. Because that's, if you wanted big chunks of time, then that's, I know people still do that. They just set a timer at home and record their own shows and then put it on CD later. Anyway, in that big room at the radio station, he had his theremin set up. He had a Moog synthesizer. He bought the whole setup from Mr. Moog.
Mr. Bob.
Bob mailed it to him, and I'm going, "You're kidding." So, you know, once a couple of us are in there making noise, he goes, "All right, that's enough. Now, while I'm on the air, nobody get close." Because even being what you think is a polite, so let's say he's there playing the theremin. He wanted us about this far away, or farther. Because if we got about this far, which seems polite enough, distance, our electrical field in our bodies would have affected his performance on the air. And I didn't know that, because I'd only played it like in a science museum before. So I said, "Okay, that's enough playing, kids." And everybody had, it's almost like he had to put a police line around. And he had some other stuff set up. There was like a keyboard.
Now there's the Nintendo Wii.
I still don't know a thing about that yet. I'm in the dark. I know what they are, yeah. I see people play them. If they keep in shape, that's good. I'm going to wander around a little bit more. But.
It was just like at the very end of the Theron movie, where these guys, he's escaped his 20 years of Russian imprisonment. He's escaped the failure of the musical project. All these various things have come and gone. He's returned to New York like 60, 70 years later. He's met the lady who's
that's pretty cool.
His first student, his first maestro at the Theron. And like now electricity has like consumed the entire world. They look back in the middle of Times Square where they used to hang out, like when this thing first started. The whole thing is electric lights. They said could never happen.
Didn't he get snagged? It seems to me he got like kidnapped right off the street by Russian spies.
Russians took him out of his home.
And he invented the bug, the modern...
He didn't work on electrified fields or fences, force fields.
I'm glad they kept him alive anyway.
Yeah, they wanted him to get stuff.
And that shows it just illustrates, obviously, you know this, the disconnect some of the Cold War had between cultural things. Nobody in the U.S. knew that Thurman was even alive.
Right.
And I'm glad that melted down. I still would like to go to Russia. I know people would have...
They were protesting at first. They were like, "How can he just disappear out of his house?" And there was never any real answer. But he arrived decades later.
Yeah, even some of the people in his neighborhood thought he was dead. How weird. I hope that never happens here. Anyway, I'm going to wander around. But make sure to show up down there. I'm not there every Friday night, but, you know... Don't wait all the way till May, you know.
I'm a big fan. I don't know how I can help, but if I can lend it my big fitness to something.
You probably have a bunch of stuff I don't have. I have a few things, but, you know, I've got some Italian bootlegs and stuff that I played. And we were still kind of worried about how to contact Gail Zappa. I've contacted her one other time, and she did answer me. But I don't know how she feels about her husband's material that isn't official. Because we have built shows, sometimes 6 to 10 hour shows. We wouldn't be able to do shows that long without the bootlegs. I mean, we've got all the releases.
It seemed like Jordan supports ZPZ, that Gail and Zap Family Trust got a lot nicer really fast than a lot of YouTube stuff. I mean, they were moving a lot of public domain bootleg things for quite some time. Until, like, I guess maybe it's just because distribution is like the idea of making the old material easily findable so you can enjoy it.
The last few releases have been really cool. Like, they released the making of Millions of Inventions, first movie, and the first book.
They're still totally arguing about Roxy and elsewhere. Like, they
better hurry up.
Was it supposed to be out?
Yeah.
Every couple of years they have an argument about it.
Well, now there's a problem with, there's only so many films of these guys. Now there's a problem, change the subject for a second, to Hendrix. There's Hendrix at the Albert Hall, and it was filmed with lights, unlike the other appearances where there weren't enough theatrical lights.
Right.
Like at Monterey, it's mostly dark.
Except for the fire.
And then he dies. But so this one was set up as an official shoot, and then they just kind of forgot about the footage. So it's still sitting there in limbo because somebody else, according to one of my collector buddies here in Portland, the BBC went ahead and released it without permission. So now the Hendrix family, what's left of them, is suing them. So when that lawsuit's over, they'll finally release this complete performance of Hendrix at the Royal Albert Hall. it's actually two different sets, like you'd expect, because they'd have the afternoon show and the evening show, or they just do two different shows because they were popular people. And they had a professional film crew there, and then they just shelled it for almost 40 years. And as soon as they're ready to release it, then they find somebody else jumped into the gun in England that was connected somehow with the Albert Hall. They didn't have any permission to do it. They just did it. And I don't know. See, that's why I've been cautious about talking to Gail, because I don't want her to tell us cease and desist. She's already done that to Ike Willis at least once. I don't know if you know about that. Ike still has no permission to use any of Frank's work.
The band from Utopia, a friend of mine is getting an autograph from once, and you referred to yourself as band from Utopia.
It's a waste of time to see them. Right. It really is. He's done his own blues stuff with Terry Robb. Terry Robb did a release called Jelly Behind the Sun, which is also a Zappa song, more or less. I mean, some people say it's an old blues song, but anyway, I just hope that I live to be 85, because I have to wait for all these lawsuits to get done so I can see the rest of them. Anyway, I gotta go bug Tom. Good talking to you. Now here we have, Glenn, some Zimbabwean art. I can't pronounce her name because I'm an Anglo guy, but yeah, it looks like her last name is Mugadza, and it's lots of purple. So I'm actually doing some artwork for you here, Glenn. I got to talking to somebody and forgot that the thing was on. Hi there. Nice outfit. Brought you a candy bar.
Ooh, that's nice. That's pretty cool. That Olympus, or what is that?
I don't know. Glenn handed it to me and asked me to walk around with it.
Hi. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow.
We have the Laffers over here.
Okay, I'll pass it over to the Laffers.
Yeah. That's
really cool. My brother has one like that.
I always carry my H2 with me, but I don't do anything with it. The little, one of these guys.
Oh, like a I got a roll in, I didn't bring it with me.
Getting rid of her task cam and two XLR inputs. It's a big one.
Are there stores that sell these? I haven't even been to any retail places. I just, the one I had was part of a grant, so.
Yeah, she, I don't know where she got it. She lives in Mexico, but she lives up here, so.
If I could actually go into a place that's not Radio Shack, but like Radio Shack, where there's four of them, and I can look at the stats and go, oh, well, that was $400, but it's not as good as this other one over here.
Yeah.
I've never been able to do that like I've done with VCRs and computers. And,
yeah.
And it's still kind of new to me.
Have you seen the Transom website?
No. I'm in the dark about a lot of this stuff.
They are awesome. It's like a bunch of professional, independent radio producers. And
okay.
The people there who do the testing of the machines are amazing. They're like super thorough. And they're like, here's this, here's audio we recorded.
So,
even
like
though it's online.
Records for,
yeah.
What is it again?
Transom.
I'll remember it. I don't have any paper with it.
And I can tell you next time I see it too.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
It's a transom like that. As long as I visualize it, I'll probably remember it when I get home. Besides, I need exactly what you're talking about. I just never bother to tell anybody.
Yeah.
Because I know that eventually what I have is going to run out. I've had it since 07, and I kind of use it a lot. I know it's going to just go sometime, and then I'll be going, oh, I don't have a recorder. What am I going to do? I don't want to record this on tape anymore.
Right. And you're like, I guess I'll have to check things out. And
I love recording spoken word with it, which is one of the main reasons I got it in the first place, because of that show that I do with Cox, or other shows where I just wanted to be able to just get used to having a portable thing with me. It ended up being really good for recording my mom before she passed away, about a year before she did. So she got down a couple of stories and songs and so shit that she used to do. But but I found out that it's good for spoken word in areas where I wouldn't have been able to record anything with that reel-to-reel tape. So I was at Merrillhurst. I was at Merrillhurst, and they have a bunch of echoey halls like this place, because it's an old church, you know, Catholic church, old girls' school. And there's this big meeting hall that was designed to take even more people than here in there. It just had this huge echo. There's no carpet on the floor. And Walt Curtis was in there reading poetry, but also reading a bunch of stuff from Sanskrit, a bunch of Buddhist stuff. And the echo made it cooler. And I had this thing in front of him, and, you know, Walt, it's okay with him. I can record him anytime. I've produced a couple of his shows, too. And people are going, they're just looking at me, they're shaking their heads, even while I'm recording. Dude, that's not going to come out. That's not going to work. Of course, it was perfect. And it cancels out a lot of those echoes that analog used to just record every bit of. And whether you've got it set to do that or not. And spoken words are always a piece of cake. Plus, you know, I had enough room on the thing to record it as a wave instead of an MP3, because I figured, well, you know, Walt's saying, obviously, it's just the way things work. So, yeah, you can do this anytime you want to. You don't have to ask for permission, because I know I'm not going to live forever. Thanks, Walt. And you can catch him in different moods, too, drunk and not drunk. If he's not so drunk that night, then you get, well, sometimes when he is smashed, it's fun, too. I've known him for years, but you never know when you're going to get the guy that's just telling everybody to shut up. You know, and I know that from my family. So. But when you get him really lucid, same as some other poets I've tried to record, like during the Mary Frankston stuff. I did, this is something I got to get right away. Daniel needed to leave town. This is one of these things where he knew I would be able to do that. He handed me his video camera to get the audio off of this Prankster's thing that they had at the Baghdad in 04, and I just found the tape. So, and I know I can turn that into at least a few radio shows, because Walt, who was sober, Mark Christensen, who wasn't, and this guy you might have heard of named Gus Van Sant, who was sober, all those guys spoke, and they all gave us permission to use the audio, and it's just been sitting in a closet until I found it, like, last week. So that's an example of me trying really hard to do that even before I had the equipment.
Yeah.
And I just knew that I could pull it off of a videotape. And I wasn't going to show the videotape because it was traffic. And Van Sant sat next to me most of the time because he was the only seat left in the place. And people were going, why didn't you talk to him? Why didn't you turn the camera to him? I could kind of see him peripherally, and I know he was nervous about me turning the camera right to him. That wasn't my job. I was taping people up on the stage. I taped him when he was on the stage and then shut it off as soon as he came back to sit down next to me. And you could just tell he was kind of relieved because he didn't want paparazzi. And I think he's really shy. That's why you don't see him around town very much. And he's really an interesting artist, obviously. He's done some fucking great movies, and I'm a fan. But I don't bug him.
Yeah.
I talked to him a little bit because Walt made a point of going, no, this is Bill Dodge. This, you know, hi. And then he just goes home like everybody else does. You know? I'm not going to go,
hi, would you like to do a radio show with us?
Because he's already been at KU anyway. You know? And I know that he's somebody that I know I should have twist his arm. It would be nice if somebody could do a half-hour radio show with him, but he's already done that. You know, he doesn't really need the publicity, per se.
No,
and he's done PSAs for us.
Yeah.
I got to, next time I'm on the air, I have to make sure to get his PSA because he did a really nice, kind of calm one. And it sounds like something that would say. I don't know if they put the whole thing on the IR, but there's one thing he recorded that he was saying that he used to listen to KU a lot before he got signed. And it was always an inspiration while he was working through the night sometimes. I'm like, okay, cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I don't... Okay, one other famous person, then I'll stop. Chuck Pialik was another guy that and some of the cartoonists we talked to, they kind of knew who we were already because they figured out that was a good thing to have on if you're really trying to work.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be interrupted by, hey, G-O-N rocks.
Right, yeah.
Or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So that's... Daniel caught on to that a long time ago. I think other than that, people probably are leaving the radio on while they're trying to get stuff done. They're not just at some graveyard thing in a warehouse. I know there's lots of people who do that, or taxi drivers. There's a whole bunch of, I like to think there's a bunch of people that are using us to get their work done. And it keeps them alive and keeps their brain going. So they're losing sleep and sipping coffee. And oh yeah, they're playing something else I haven't heard. And I know this for a fact, way before Daniel told me this, because one of my buddies that isn't that well known, but is the main at Miniman's artist. He's the guy that does all the stuff that you see in the newspapers and does all the t-shirts. I went to high school with him. He used to call me up when we were down there. Hey, you know, this is like 3 o'clock in the morning. Hey, I'm in the elevator at the hotel at McMinnville. Just thought I'd let you know I'm listening. Thanks. This job would be really boring without you guys. So I gotta go. I gotta go back to painting some flowers in here. Okay, see ya.
You need a both hands. I wasn't doing a hands
free. Right. Yeah, and you're like, right, if you're working, you can't just flip over tape.
And he's one of these people that whenever they started a building, McMinnimans are pretty smart, you know. They'll get a building like this, and if it's not decorated or if it's in bad shape, they'll bring in the artist first. That's what they did with the crystal. Because they didn't have the money for it yet.
I'm skipping out secretly.
Okay, see you.
I got
more than a year
of your contact information.
I think you do, but I'll email it to you when I get home for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it all.
Okay.